This is Leafs Lunch with Andy Petrillo on TSN 4 and TSN 1050, the voice of Leafs Nation.
If you're home, hopefully you're staying warm and dry. If you're on the road, be careful. That rain is coming down hard. Festchuk flying on in from Brooklyn today. Your flight did not get canceled, even though they were calling in for this ice storm. You made it.
They were canceling flights left and right. I got on the first jet out of town, and here I am.
Nice. And, yes, you're helping us out big time. As welcome on into Leafs Lunch, Andy Petrillo, alongside Gord Miller. And, yes, Dave Festchuk, supposed to be Dave Poulin. Jamie McLennan, apparently spreading the plague.
So dominoes.
We had to stick him dominoes in quarantine. Yeah. So Dave Poulin on a flight to Ottawa to call the game tonight.
Yes.
So Festchuk helping us out here.
Let's hope that flight took off for Pooley.
Yeah.
I'm sure it did. LaGuardia, for whatever reason, New York airports, at the first sign of a snowflake, they're in Washington. It's a snowflake! Shut the airport! I don't know why they do that, but it's a strange sort of...
Yeah, but right now everything's working out for us. So that's all that matters.
All about you, Andy.
Yeah, this is very true. Yeah, okay. If people haven't figured it out by now, I really don't know how else to tell you. So Leafs are in action tonight. I pulled the veteran move. I knew they were playing last night, so I'm like, I'm not going to go to the rink. I know they're not going to have morning skate, and they didn't.
They said there were players there, and Mike Babcock was in rare form this morning.
Yeah, saw his quotes. Yeah, heard them. They already played them. Interesting. Leafs, of course, coming off the 6-5 overtime loss to the Islanders. So 2-3-1 on this 6-game road trip. Previous 6-game road trip, 5-0-1. So, little lopsided there. Four straight game, the Leafs have allowed 5 or more goals. And I know the overarching theme we've been discussing since day one has been defense. But when you're looking at that, it's got to be overall team defense, too. And I know they need that blue liner. But it just feels like even now the forwards are getting away from that defensive game.
Well, talking to Mike Babcock this morning, and just, you know, we met briefly after his press conference, and just said it's not one position, it's not one person, it's the way our team is playing. And I think to your point, he talked about we're wanting to be the Oilers of the 80s. Mm-hmm. We're wanting to attack in waves. That game's over. That game, you might as well be talking about, you know, a Rover playing, because that's how far along that's gone. He wants everyone, as he said, if you play the right way, you'll score and you'll win. And as he says, I like winning. So why don't we play the right way and win? And I don't think he was singling him out, but, you know, Van Riemsdyk gambles in overtime, gets caught, 3-on-1. I mean, look at the Islanders' goals last night. How many of them would you blame Freddie Anderson on?
There were, this is another.
Tap-ins, guys left alone in front of the net.
Yeah, there were at least three of those. There were at least three of those. Ryan Strome
screaming
to the net. But
Freddie's looked really off.
That's the point here. I think you look at it since January 1, Freddie Anderson has not been the same Freddie Anderson that we saw turn it on in November and December after a rocky October. And I think it's a concern. I mean, you look at it, statistically, it's brutal. Like, he's dead last in goals against average since January 1st among goalies that have started at least half of the team's
888
games.
888 save percentage, 3.53 goals against when you compare October to December.
Yeah.
925 save percentage, 247 goals against.
Yeah, and he had a bad October in that stretch. So it's getting worse for Freddie Anderson, and of course there's all that concern. We've talked about this ad nauseum, but it needs to be brought up again, that he's never worked this hard. He's never played this much. He's never seen this much rubber in a season. And how is he going to react? Well, so far, not well. But you're right, Gord. He's got to be helped out.
He didn't look tired last night when guys are left alone in front of him, you know, to tip pucks in, or when they score a tap-in on a 2-on-1.
He's given up some big rebounds. He didn't look particularly sharp. He made a couple of great saves, but I think he's got to be more solid. But he's not the only one. Look, this to me comes down to one thing in a lot of ways. It's Morgan Rielly playing on one leg now.
I saw this last year in Ottawa with Kyle Turris. He tried and he tried and he tried. And you just, when you're, and Kyle told me in the off season, he didn't feel right again until August. Couldn't push off.
High ankle sprain.
Yeah. You can't push off. You have no strength. Now you're questioning yourself. Can I pivot here? He's clearly, I mean, I give him a lot of credit for trying it, but he's clearly diminished. But beyond that, it underlines the glaring need for this team, and that is a true number one 25-minute-a-night defenseman. Now, if you want your model to be Alex Petrangelo in St. Louis, Drew Doughty in Los Angeles, Brent Burns, and whoever that is. They are so hard to find. They don't hit the free agent market, almost never. Scott Niedermeyer did because his brother played in Anaheim, but for the most part, they don't become free agents. They occasionally get traded, but in special circumstances, not very often. Where you get them is in the draft and usually in the first half of the first round. And that means whoever the Leafs draft, say they take a defenseman with a top 20 pick this year in the draft, he likely won't be ready to assume those 25 minutes a night for 4 to 5 years. That's the reality. And I know people, I get people in Toronto come up to me and say, you know, you're preaching patience. You have to be patient.
Well, and so here's the thing when it comes to defense.
Excuse me.
Yes, you need number one, but I think where the frustration is coming in is also the lack of maybe a real number two or kind of that 1B. Nikita Zaitsev was playing really well, and it just seems ever since Morgan Rielly went down. Now, I'll give Zaitsev credit. I felt like he really stood tall. When everyone said that the spotlight needed to go on Jake Gardner during that time that Morgan Rielly was out, it was Zaitsev who never looked out of place, even though he wasn't with his regular partner anymore. And then it was ever since Morgan Rielly came back, that St. Louis game, Zaitsev's kind of been looking a little off. But Jake Gardner, who's supposed to be the guy, there's a lot of people out there who believe that he shouldn't be in the 3-4. He should be the 1-2. Well, he was now given that opportunity with Morgan Rielly out, and he just doesn't seem to be getting the job done. So I think the frustration, too, is the lack of depth for guys to step up and say, okay, Morgan Rielly went out. Now, to your point, he's back. He's on one leg. We know that he's playing hurt, but they're not going to shut him down because they're in the hunt. They're in the playoff hunt. But then where's the backup? Where are the guys to support?
Well, but beyond that, even the question is a healthy Morgan Rielly that number one defenseman?
Probably that's a whole other topic, yeah.
Probably not on your ideal team. You're right. He's not a Duncan Keith. He's not a Drew Doughty. He is not one of those guys. And does he have the chance to grow into that? It's debatable, right? He probably doesn't have the defensive chops to be in that league.
So how do you address that?
But the problem is, Gord, as you point out, you can't get one in the window you're hoping to contend here, right? Because you're hoping this thing can happen faster than we probably thought it could happen. You're hoping you can contend in the rookie contract of an Austin Matthews and a Mitch Marner.
Then I think, to be honest with you, you're in grave danger of repeating what the Edmonton Oilers did for the last decade, of having all these forwards and spinning your wheels with a bad defense. That's what they did. The Oilers had all those forwards and spun their wheels with a below-average defense or average to below-average defense and couldn't compete. If you want to know what the difference is between the Detroit Red Wings now and the teams that made the playoffs for 25 straight years, look at their defense.
Yeah.
Look at their defense.
Well, and that's why like a Nick Lidstrom can,
but
can
even
carry you for two decades.
You know, since 2006 when Carolina won, and they did it with basically five number two defensemen. But since 2006, every Stanley Cup team has had a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. Every single one.
Yeah.
And people say, what about Chris Letang in Pittsburgh? He's a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. Yeah. He's an elite, elite player.
And even though, and we talked about Frederik Andersen starting to look comfortable, and we talked about his numbers and really looking good after that poor start in October, you almost wonder if it isn't so much a skill thing when it comes to Andersen, then yes, we looked at fatigue, but even frustration. Like with this young team, with the lack of defense, they're 25th in the league in shots against a game. At some point you're saying, are you frigging kidding me? Like, and to your point, like I get it. Some of the goals you're looking at and you're like, come on, Freddie, you should have those. But then he might turn around and say, well, Gardner shouldn't have been that soft in the court. Like that guy should never have gotten in front of the net to begin with. Like there's other things going on where now mentally he has to stay tough and not get frustrated.
You're going to give up. On average, NHL teams score once every 11 shots. So if you play 10 games in a row and you give up 33 shots, you will give up, on average over those 10 games, you'll give up 3 goals a night. That's not a winning, formula. It's just not. And in this league now, the best way it was described to me was by John Cooper in Tampa. You can't outscore your mistakes. You just can't. Dallas is trying. They can't do it.
Well, the Leafs did it on Saturday night in Boston when they won 6-5.
You'll do it once in a while.
You'll do it once in a while, and that's the thing. I think they really enjoyed that game in Boston on Saturday night. I happened to be there, and the players were euphoric after they won that thing, even though they blew the proverbial 4-1 lead in Boston, as the Leafs tend to do now and then, 2013
we're
and all that.
We're going to ignore that. Continue.
Yeah. So that's, and I think that's the concern that Babcock was probably showing last night and today when he talked about, you know, how you have to play right. You know, it's not a race to 10,
right,
is what he said. He said, hey, if we would have lost last night 2-1 in overtime, I would have been okay with that. 6-5, not so much. And that, there's a mentality among this rookie squad, I think, that they're starting to enjoy the personal stats. They're starting to probably like the fact that they're breaking all these records. And you know.
Well, last night we saw two of them, right? For the first time ever, five rookies for the Toronto Maple Leafs score. And also Zach Hyman, right? Becoming the first Toronto Maple Leaf rookie to get three shorthanded goals in a single season. So you're right. Like and this is what Babcock talked about early on in the season. Because this is what guys do in the minors, right? Like, you have these high-scoring games, you have all this room, it's all about racking up the stats.
But in their defense, and I say this, you know, I know this team's missed the playoffs 10 times in the last 11 years. This is year two of the rebuild. And I've said this before, but this is year two. You're less than 2 years away from Kessel, Phaneuf, all those players, Clarkson being unloaded. This is very early in a rebuild.
I expect the best right away.
Well, you're going to be disappointed. But you are.
Gordon, yeah,
you
welcome to my life.
Right.
Yeah, but tell that to Mike Babcock, who way back in November went into Chicago and talked about how his team reminds him of a certain team in Chicago that won the Stanley Cup in year three of their little rebuild around Taves and Kane, right?
With Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and Nicholas Hjalmarsson.
But Babcock was the guy that pointed out
that
his team reminded him of that team. And so you're wondering why people are getting excited and why people are maybe ahead of themselves.
I blame one guy, and his name is Mr.
Babcock.
They should be excited, but this is going to take time.
Yeah.
This is going to take time. This team is not – half the players on this team won't be on it when they get to where people think they should be.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for sure.
To me, I think fans will always remain – happy, is that the word? But they'll always remain okay with what's going on, provided they see movement to make the team better.
Right?
And that's, to your point, half this team may not be here and they actually start winning. But let's just say this team is still here, still put together the same exact way in year three and year four, and they're not really making any kind of progress. I think that's when your fan base starts to get a little prickly. But as long as they start to see movement and things that make the team better, then they're always going to be okay with what management is doing.
What's the most successful rebuilds we've seen in the last 10 years in the NHL? Los Angeles Kings, right? Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
Right? Chicago Blackhawks. Kane, Taves, great defense. The Florida Panthers are, you know, in year four of the rebuild, Aaron Ekblad, elite defenseman.
They're not where they need to be.
But they were but they got to the playoffs last year. Went to Game 7. I mean, they made the playoffs.
Just
last year.
Just got their coach fired too.
Had a good well, that's special circumstances there. But
Pittsburgh Penguins were horrible until they got Crosby.
Right, but they also also drafted and developed a very good underrated defense.
Right,
you know, Chris Letang is better than any defenseman Toronto has, by a lot.
Is he better than Morgan Rielly by a lot?
Yes.
Morgan Rielly develops into
Morgan
Rielly's
a good. Morgan Rielly's a really good player. Chris Letang is an elite NHL defenseman.
Yeah. All right. Well, we had Darren Dreger coming up soon, so we have to, as always, get to our grades of the game.
It's time to find out who made the grade. This is Leafs Lunch. Grades of the game.
Grades of the Game is brought to you by Borrowell.com. That's right. And now as a sponsor, folks, do you know your financial grade with digital innovator Borrowell.com? You can check your credit score for free and get approved on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get graded today at Borrowell.com. Festchuk, why don't you go first with your grades?
Well, I want to go a B for Morgan Rielly for gutting it out.
Yeah.
And we know what he's going through here. As you talked about, Gord, Kyle Turris went through it last year. It's a high ankle sprain. It's not healed, it's not ready, and yet he's pushing himself out there 22 minutes a night these past couple of nights. Can't be easy. On the other hand, on the slightly less complimentary side, I'm going to give a D to Freddie Anderson, because as much as I understand why he threw his defense under the bus last night and said we've got to be better around our net, we've got to be tougher around our net, the opposition is jumping on pucks too quickly, you know, not really taking any of the blame himself for giving up as many goals as he's given up, which is five in regulation in a handful of games here, and of course an extra in overtime last night. You know, he's got to be better. He has got to figure this thing out. Let's be honest. He's starting to look like the Freddie Anderson of October and not the one in November, December who looked elite. Mm-hmm. Exactly who he is going to really define in a lot of ways what this season is.
Very true. All right, those are your grades.
I'm going to give Nikita Soshnikov an A-. Hmm. He's got 3 goals in his last 6 games, played well last night, and doesn't play a lot. I think one of the hardest things to do in the NHL is to produce at any rate when you're not playing. When you get 3-4 shifts a period, it's hard to get into a rhythm. When you make a mistake, you have to sit there and stew on it. I think he's been really good the last few games and trying to solidify a fourth line that's really had its ups and downs mm-hmm. in the last few weeks. And I'm going to give Jake Gardner a D-. And I think that, you know, he's a guy that they've worked with a lot. I really like him as a person. I like him as a player. But you know Morgan Riley's compromised. This is when you got to step up. This mm-hmm. is when you've really got to be better than he was last night. And I just don't think he gave them the kind of defending and puck battles that they need when Riley's, you know, at 65%.
My grade's really no surprise to anybody. I'm giving away A's. But I'm giving A to the Leafs offense. This is what has been getting them through. And a few games ago, they only put up 1-goal games. here, they're putting up 5 goals each. So at least the offense is back. Because if you want to talk about having to repair so many things, at least that's the one thing that's back on track. Fix the other stuff, but at least you can score goals. So I'm going to give them an A. To your point, even with Freddie, love my Freddie, but...
You cut it right to the quick with that D minus.
No, but it really did hurt me.
It was a D. Sorry.
But that's where you have to say, well, Freddie, your team is putting up 5 goals or 6 goals. Like, at some point, you know, make a save, right? So offense gets an A. And then I'll single out Zach Hyman. I'm going to give him an A, as we mentioned, making Leafs history, becoming the first Leafs rookie to score 3 shorthanded goals in a single season. He's a huge reason why the PK has been strong, why special teams have been strong for them. And now he's also figuring out how to convert when he's getting those chances. He's not only helping on the penalty kill to prevent the other team from scoring, but then he's managing to actually get the puck, create a chance, go on in and score.
Where were you when I was in school?
I know.
You hand out A's like candy.
I really do.
Like, seriously.
I'm favorite teacher right here. All right, so the grades of the game brought to you by Borrowell.com. Do you know your financial grade? With digital innovator Borrowell.com, you can check your credit score for free and get approval on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get graded today at Borrowell.com. We have more coming up, including our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online on TSN 4. We are at our Sport Check studios outside the Air Canada Centre. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Dave Festchuk. The Leafs in action again tonight against the Dallas Stars. You can catch the pregame right here on TSN 4 beginning at 7 p.m. with puck drop at 7:30. The Leafs coming off a 6-5 overtime loss to the Islanders, going 2-3-1 in that 6-game road trip. Curtis McElhinney will be getting the start tonight for the Leafs. Freddie Anderson having the night off. Still no Alexei Marchenko, the defenseman they claimed off waivers from the Detroit Red Wings. Babcock saying he will not be in the lineup tonight. So the only change from last night will be in goal, with Curtis McElhinney getting the start. Let's welcome into the show now our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. This hockey insider is brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Dregs?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Fabulous. Well,
we're great. We were just discussing blood types. It turns out I'm the universal donor, O negative. So I give to everyone. No one can really give to me, Dregs. That's what I discovered with the guys on the panel here.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing.
The things you learn, huh?
Exactly. I have no idea what blood type I am. Isn't that terrible?
What?
Like, aren't you supposed to automatically know that in the event you're in an emergency room and all of that nonsense? I got to find that out.
Yes. Yes, what are you? Because if you're O negative, you could also be a universal donor like me, although I doubt it.
Mine's Cabernet Sauvignon. It's my blood type.
Or Jameson.
Why do
I
think
days.
You're not lying?
Yes. Or game days, too.
Yeah. Hey, so Dregs, so I just talked about the lineup changes, and really it's just the one in goal. Are you maybe surprised that we're not seeing Marchenko just tonight? Only because, I mean, it's a guy they claimed... Babcock knows him. He was a guy they picked up while he was still in Detroit. And let's face it, it's not like the defense really can get any worse at this time.
Well, because of that, I am a little skeptical. If the belief was by Mike Babcock or anyone in the decision-making forum of the Toronto Maple Leafs that Marchenko could make them instantly better, regardless of a lack of practice time, all of that, I suspect he'd be in the lineup. So the fact that he isn't in the lineup maybe just gives you the sense that, you know, he was plucked off waivers to be a depth type of guy. And maybe he's better than that given the opportunity, but that has to be the view within immediately. Or there's something else. Or he's got something bugging him health-wise, whatever. Otherwise, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because don't you think, Drake, they'll put him with Zaitsev? They played together at the World Championship. The first time they've been paired. But, you know, it obviously gives Zaitsev, you know, a comfort level he might not otherwise have.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it also gives Marchenko the opportunity to show that he's ready. He's ready to be a contributing full-time NHL defenseman. It's not hard to understand why the Maple Leafs would even take a gamble, if we're willing to call it that. You know, he's a big guy. He can skate. I'm not sure what his upside is from an offensive perspective, puck moving and all of that. But he has to be better than what they've got, you know, in that 6-7-8 hole, if you will. But when you look at the blue line of the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially when Morgan Riley wasn't on it, and you could even see signs last night versus the Islanders that clearly he's not close to being 100% healthy. But with him out of the lineup entirely, that exposed that blue line and the defensive coverage of this team in a big, big way. So I suspect that Lou Lamoriello, like so many other NHL general managers, is looking for more assistance than Marchenko provides.
So, Dregs, what do you think we're seeing when we look at Freddie Anderson since January 1? Because, you know, his numbers are near the bottom of the league among goalies who play regularly. His goals against average is, you know, 3.5. His save percentage is well below that 900 mark that kind of signifies minor leaguer. Yeah. I mean, are we seeing a guy who's fallen off, or are we just seeing a defense that's getting exposed more often, like with the tap-ins last night around the net?
I think more of the latter, but a little of both. And maybe it's just the time of year. You know, certain players, teams in general, will go through, you know, kind of the lull of just past the mid-season point. And for the most part, that's where the Toronto Maple Leafs are. And if you look around the National Hockey League, I mean, nobody's questioning Carey Price and the Montreal Canadiens, but they have staggered of late. And maybe Price isn't up to his razor-sharp type of play. But you know that he's going to bounce back. And I'm not making the comparison Anderson to Price. I'm just saying players and goaltenders do tend to go through this. But he needs to be better. But defensively, I mean, as a group, the Toronto Maple Leafs have to give him far more protection than what we're seeing. I mean, last night in the first goal, Ryan Strome scores. You know, not to completely throw Morgan Riley under the bus and coming back into the lineup. But, I mean, he was way out of position. Now, there was a big juicy rebound given up, and Strome looks after his own rebound. But there was a lot of breakdowns that led to that goal a minute and a half into the hockey game.
Darren, let's talk about Dallas a little bit. I'm curious about whether or not they think they can go forward with this defense. And I know that Jim Mills says they can, the GM, their coach, Lindy Ruff, says he can. They've made 10 in-game goaltending changes this year. Antti Niemi's been pulled from his last three starts. One of them, he got a win. He got pulled after giving up the sixth goal against the Rangers, but got the win in that game.
That's sweet.
That's hard to do. But I mean, they're right now not in the top eight position in the West. They're a now team, you'd have to think. I mean, how long can they go on with this?
That great question. And, you know, we talked to similar people within that organization, Gord, and I'm getting the same messaging that you are, and that is they like what they've got in goal. They don't feel like they need to be searching for an upgrade in goal. And then you start talking about their defense, and, you know, the word back is, well, yeah, we're not playing as well as we need to, but it's not just the blue line. It's a collective defense, which then leads you to, okay, well, you know, are they starting maybe to tune Lindy Ruff out a little bit? No, heavens no. It's not a coaching issue. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of covering up going on around the Dallas Stars, which tells me that, you know, Jim Neal still obviously believes in the group. But beyond belief, you've got to find a way to win. And they haven't done that consistently enough. And we start looking at goaltending, but they keep telling us that they're okay with their goaltending, generally speaking.
They also had 6 of the 9 forwards out at the start of the year. They didn't have Sagan, Ben coming off surgery. I mean, there's all that, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's some good news if you always want to look at the glass half full for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, we talk about 8 times this season they've blown third period leads. Well, the Stars have yet to come back and win a game this year when they're trailing after 2.
The Islanders hadn't either until last night.
Okay, well, you know what? Don't burst my bubble, okay?
That's what I do, Dandy. I'm here to burst your bubble. That's why.
Thanks.
Specifically why I'm here. Can we ask, Dregs, Claude Julien firing? Surprise? Not surprise?
Not surprised, you know, given everything that has swirled around this organization, not just recently, but
that they waited for the day of the Patriots Super Bowl parade to do it.
Yeah, the timing is
something
bizarre,
tells me it's not
going to
rain on the parade.
I was listening in to the media conference, and you guys are on the air, so you probably haven't had the luxury to do that. Maybe you've played some of the sound. Oh, my goodness. I mean, Don Sweeney got absolutely grilled and hammered over the timing of this. And his response, I'll give him credit, he hung in there, man, and he took a fair number of punches to the head, to the body. I mean, you know, the wily old ink-stained scribes in Boston were out to get him. And his response was, look, it's more based on our schedule and the fact that we have a couple of days and we've got a bit of time to practice here. They clearly didn't like the way the team was playing with Claude Julien as head coach of late. Over the last several months, whatever, who knows what the timeline is for the Jacobs family, but they wanted Cassidy and the new regime, if you will, to at least have a couple of days to get the players back on track.
So what were they upset at timing-wise, because it was the parade?
Yeah, well, I mean,
or just because of where they were in the season for the Bruins?
No, well, I think a little bit of both. I mean, Don Sweeney isn't often available to media either, could be part of it.
He doesn't talk to the media much.
No, that could be part of it. So, yeah, it's a lot of things. I mean, there's some stuff going on today in Boston, Andy. I mean, you know, it's in a shrinking industry, which, you know, journalism sadly is suffering through right now. You know, many of these organizations are trying to multitask, but we can appreciate why the focus should be on the New England Patriots and the Super Bowl parade. Yeah. So I think that sour.
Wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, CFL, like, wasn't it the Argonauts who won the Grey Cup, and that's when they decided to announce the Mike Babcock hiring, right? Yeah. And that, like, threw, you know, the Toronto Argonauts with the, and I get, trust me, I get it. Like, there should be some sort of cohesiveness with the sports teams in the same city where it's, you kind of respect each other's turf
In Ottawa, they announced the Daniel Alfredson ceremony was the same day, the Brian Murray Ring of Honor ceremony was the same day as Henry Burris announced his retirement. But Darren, I firmly believe in 2011, if Tim Thomas hadn't made a toe save on Brian Gionta in the first overtime of Game 7, that Claude Julien, Peter Chiarelli, the whole bunch of them were out. Like, this is not, I mean, Cam Neely's been hunting for that head for a while. Even after they won the cup, he said, Claude's improving as a coach. That was his, was the biggest compliment he could give.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, I haven't spoke to Cam directly about this, but, you know, those who are familiar with what he sees the Boston Bruins as being, he wants to open things up. You know, he sees how the Toronto Maple Leafs are playing with their young players and some of the other younger teams around the National Hockey League who can skate. Well, you know, with great respect to David Backes, who they bring in on a longer term, he's not that type of player. Matt Bolesky, you know, he can get down the ice, but that's not his style either. So I guess the thing that I would question is how much of it is coaching and how much of it is management. And, you know, Julien just doesn't have the pieces to play that style of hockey. So, you know, now that they've gotten rid of the excuse, and look, Claude Julien's not losing any sleep over this. He understands the business of the game. It's hockey. Life goes on, and he knows that he's going to have a handful of opportunities, perhaps in the near future, certainly in the off season. So the change will be good for Claude Julien, and now the heat is on management and senior management to turn things around for the Bruins.
Well, and you can talk about management, Dregs, but you look at the last two coaching firings in the NHL, I don't think it's any coincidence that Ken Hitchcock was fired by the St. Louis Blues, and the St. Louis Blues currently reside in 30th place.
Right.
In team save percentage. And Claude Julien was fired by the Bruins, and they're in the bottom five in team save percentage.
Yeah.
Coaching and goaltending go so hand in hand to me.
And defense.
Well, yeah, and of course.
So you got a 40-year-old Zdeno Chara who's not the player he was.
No, a shell.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, coaches will often joke, you know, you want to see a good coach? You know, just have a look at his goaltender. If he's got a quality goaltender, then chances are there's a good coach. But not to take this off rails here for a little bit, but Bob McKenzie was asking earlier, Gord, you might even know this. I mean, has in the history of the National Hockey League, have two future Hall of Fame head coaches ever been fired during season?
I remember the one year when I think the entire coaching staff from Salt Lake City was fired.
Yeah.
I think the entire Canadian coaching staff from Salt Lake City was fired.
The year Pat Quinn was fired.
Pat Quinn was fired. Ken Hitchcock was fired. Right. Jacques Martin was fired. Well, like, they were all fired in the same year.
You know, it's a tough group, but I mean, to say the least.
So the thing for Claude Julien, as you say, he won't be out of work long, and the question's going to be, where does he want to land? I think Vegas would be great because he and George McPhee had one of the greatest fights in the history of hockey.
Oh, so they'd work so well together.
In the Central League. Oh, they love each other now. But in the Central League in the 1970s, McPhee played for Tulsa. Yeah. Julien played for Salt Lake City. There's grainy VHS tape that I've seen. It's a punch-in-the-face contest for 5 minutes. Julien's parents were there. Tulsa, McPhee's team, their arena went bankrupt that year. They played their entire season on the road and won the championship.
Well, and if memory serves, because I did an Ottawa game recently, Gord, maybe you did that game as well when the Bruins came through, and Julien was talking about that fight again, and it went on for like 5, 6, 7 minutes, and he got knocked down at one point. The anti-fighting people are not going to like this, Jot, but Julien went down at one point because George McPhee tagged him, and because his parents were there, there was no way he was staying down, so he got up and continued the tilt. I mean, you're talking about two tough dudes.
He's an awesome guy. Claude Julien was the compensation that the Quebec Nordiques got for Jacques Demers going to St. Louis.
Yeah.
He was the one of the players they got in compensation. He's got great stories, and he's a really good hockey coach.
Terrific.
He's a really good coach.
Yeah. Vegas makes sense. It does because I mean, number one, they're in need of a coach, and he did so many of the things that they would need with his experience and all of that. Claude Julien can only look at that opportunity one of two ways. Either he doesn't see himself as a fit because he thinks there's going to be a contending team or a top contending team in the near future or in the offseason that is going to come calling, which is likely. Frankly, it's likely. Or he does see it as a good fit, and he knows he's got 2, maybe 3 years of grace, and then that team, because they paid deeply to land the expansion franchise, are probably going to be a playoff-worthy team. So maybe that intrigues him to some degree as well. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything we're talking about with Claude Julien, you know that he's a great coach. It just almost feels like because someone had been there for so long, there was just a restlessness where sometimes you just want a change at the helm. But if you were to look at, that's now 4 in-season firings this season. So if you were to look at the guys who are available, so you got Gallant, Capuano, Hitchcock, and now Julien, is there a front runner for Vegas?
Well, I think it would be Claude Julien. I know that they're pretty eager to talk to him. Now he's got the remainder of this year under contract, next year at $3 million. I mean, that's going to be the going rate for that level of experience, if not higher. I can't imagine George McPhee and management in Vegas won't try and get to him ASAP. And then you go down from there. I know that the plan from Vegas's perspective was to be patient for this opportunity, waiting for the right guy, an established winning coach, to become available. So, I can't imagine that Vegas wouldn't take advantage of it, provided that Claude Julien sees the Golden Knights as the right fit.
I think it's Gerard Gallant. I still think it's Gallant. I think they're going to look and talk to people, but I still think they pick Gerard Gallant.
All right, well, we have to keep an eye on that. Before we let you go, Dregs, let's just get back to tonight, Leafs game, taking on the Dallas Stars, which you can catch right here on TSN4. So we've been talking a lot about, so it's the second half of the season. The last few years, Leafs haven't exactly been that great after All-Star. So you can't sometimes just look at it's a young team. Well, how do you explain the last few years? But, you know, 3 of the last 4 games, giving up the first goal of the game in less than 3 minutes in. You look at the amount of goals they're giving up. You look at the losses right now. Is it too soon? Do you almost have to wait to the end of the season? Or are you still looking at this team? Are you getting a sense that maybe it is the youth or maybe it's just a lull?
I think it's a little of both, Andy. If we're willing to be critical or at least accepting of the youth making the mistakes that they're making, then you have to balance that with the reality that 5 rookie players scored goals for the Toronto Maple Leafs last night. you know, versus the New York Islanders. So it's the youth that's carrying this team. I mean, going through this adversity isn't a bad thing. This is going to make this team stronger. Babcock wants this team to have to deal and go through meaningful games, and they are right now. Every game that Toronto plays has to have a playoff intensity to it. Otherwise, you know, they're not going to qualify. But there's a lot of work to do, and so many teams that have more experience and are just as hungry to qualify for a postseason spot in the East as the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Dregs, thanks so much for taking the time, my friend. And find out your blood type.
I'll try.
It'll be beneficial. That is our TSN Hockey Insider. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. Were you hanging out with Noodles? Why are you coughing?
I've been sick for a week. I was flying to St. Louis last week, and this guy next to me coughed on me the whole way down.
Gross. On a plane, too. There is nowhere to escape.
So I did the same. I started feeling sick during the St. Louis game, and I've been kind of battling. I'm okay tonight, though. I feel like I'll be okay tonight.
Whoa.
I'm calling the game tonight.
Well, sure, because you've just passed it on to the rest of us right now.
Disinfect that headset immediately after this show is done.
Really? Do you want to go down that road? Because God knows where your headset's been. I don't know.
My headset's
You were in Brooklyn
fine.
Last night, for
That's
God's
true.
Sake.
Ugh,
why do you put me with germy people? We got more to talk about with the Toronto Maple Leafs here taking on the Dallas Stars tonight. Don't go anywhere as you continue to listen on TSN 1050, stream online, and on the TV, TSN 4. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com as we welcome you back into Leafs Lunch. We had our Sport Check studios outside the Air Canada Centre as the Toronto Maple Leafs back in action tonight against the Dallas Stars. You can catch that game on TSN 4 and Nick Petrillo alongside Gord Miller and Dave Festchuk. Gord, you're going to be calling the game tonight. We knew it was a crazy game against Dallas just last week. 6-3, the Stars came out on top after scoring 5 goals alone in the first period. That was highly exhausting. But we discussed this the next day on the show. You still had a feeling, even when the Leafs made it 5-2, you had a feeling that the Leafs could actually come back, but it was also because they were playing the Dallas Stars. So the Dallas Stars are coming off back-to-back losses. They lost their last 2 games after playing the Leafs. They're second last in the league in goals against. You would sit there and think, okay, like, come on, Leafs. Like, this is a team you can beat.
This is not a new thing for Dallas. Mm-hmm. I mean, I called their series last year in the first round against Minnesota. I mean, honestly, they were playing dodgeball lots of nights. And Niemi and Lehtinen were playing dodgeball. And, you know, they basically wound up almost alternating them. And then in game 7 against the Blues, Lehtinen fell apart in the first period, and that was the series. You know, in this league, you're all in. These guys are signed, you're capped out. This is what their biggest thing is. They need their goaltending to solidify, they need their veterans to step up, and they need John Klingberg to be the player that they think he can be. So in the offseason, they move out Jason Demers, right? They move out Alex Goligoski, they move out the veteran D, and they turn the keys over to Klingberg. And he was dreadful on the weekend for them. I mean, Lindy Ruff called him out, but he was awful on the weekend. He looks like a guy who's trying to make everything happen. He's just trying to change the game himself. He's a talented guy. He's a really good young player, but he just looks to me like Erik Karlsson 3 or 4 years ago when he was trying to win the game by himself, and he can't do it.
Well, you give Jim Neal a lot of credit because, you know, we heard in this town for so long how you can't get centers, Now they got one with Matthews, but he went out and got centers. He got Spezza, and he got Seguin, and he was able to restore that, but you talk about a team with defensive problems. I mean, you know, the Leafs have them, but this team, when you look at John Klingberg's playing 23 minutes a night, who's their number 2 defenseman? Esa Lindell?
Yeah.
I mean, then it goes down to Dan Hamhuis.
Who's a healthy scratch in November.
Yeah, and who's way past his prime. Yeah. Then you're down to Jordy Benn. I mean, defensive depth's an issue, and then it doesn't help that, and probably ties into the fact that they're 28th in save percentage. They were 25th last year. They were 29th the year before. They never really found a number one.
And they've got Oduya out. They thought that Johnny Oduya could help them out. Yeah. They brought him out in the offseason. He's been out. Hemsky's out. Janmark's probably out for the year. You know, they had Tyler Seguin had the Achilles last year. He had the cracked heel at the World Cup camp. Jimmy Benn has had 2 major surgeries the last 2 offseasons. He had double hip surgery 2 years ago. Then last year had
this team's falling apart.
Surgery. Well, they're not falling apart, but what they are, Andy, is they're a team that's built for now, and they might not be good enough right now. That's the problem is that they might only get to the third floor, not the fourth floor. They might not be able to break through. And And the problem is they are built for now. These players are signed for now. There's not a ton. They've got some young players coming, but they're, for the most part, the idea would be that the Dallas Stars would be a team that would contend right now.
But when you look at the West, I mean, you talk about every Western team pretty much has that stud number one D, not to mention some pretty good goaltending.
They're just not in that league right now. They thought Klingberg, and they still do think that Klingberg is that guy.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he is?
I think at his best he is. When John Klingberg, his skill set at his best, yes, he's an elite defenseman. But he's not the way he's playing right now. And until they may have to insulate him with a veteran or something, but until they figure that out, they're not going to go a long way because tough division. Minnesota might be the best team in the league right now, them or Washington.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chicago's still really good. I mean, they're not what they were, but Chicago's still pretty good. St. Louis, for all the struggles, still a very good team. Nashville, a very good team.
They'd have to catch a wild card spot.
They got to catch a wild card spot, and it's not going to be easy because those teams in the Pacific are tough too.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, it's funny. I still think Dallas and Tampa should make it, but you keep saying that. And they don't play well enough to do it.
So here's something that we discussed the other day too when we were talking about the Leafs not closing out games. And it's all trying to understand that even if you have a 2-goal lead, 3-goal lead, that's not the time to think you have all this freedom in the world to make the passes that maybe you wouldn't make in a tight game because you actually think you have the space. You maybe get a little bit cute. Maybe you do the extra pass as opposed to taking the shot because you need to understand your opponent's mentality as well. And you need to understand that they're going to start playing desperate hockey because what do they have to lose? They're already down in a game. So when you start talking about a Dallas Stars team, that's built to win now, you already know they're walking into this game with a different kind of desperation.
Right.
They need to win now. And they proved that last week when they played the Leafs and scored as early as they did and ended up, with 5 goals in that first period. And then, of course, they're going to take their foot off the gas a bit and allow the Leafs to score a couple more goals there. I mean, that's just kind of human nature. So that's where it almost seems like I guess what I'm trying to get is when we talk about the youth, or at least when I talk about the youth of the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's not their skill level. They have it. It's mentally understanding where the other team is and their desperation level and their situation in the league.
They understand. I mean, they play this. I mean, no team says we're going to take this team lightly. No one says that.
But subconsciously, things can maybe sneak up on you that you don't even realize.
But as Mike Babcock said this morning, it's not the third period. It's the way they play all the time. They play in the third period the way they play all the time. Loose, thinking one direction. I really think, just think for a second. Okay, they've lost 7 games in overtime this year, that overtime or shootouts that they led. Mm-hmm. At some point in the second period, or led after the second period. Just convert half of those.
I think it's 9 now.
It's 8. Well, 8. Sure.
One's in regulation.
And then 7 have been out here.
And there's others that they've led where they had the lead at some point in the third period. Just convert half of those. Mm-hmm. You've got a pretty firm grip on a playoff spot.
You would. Yeah.
But see, that's my point.
Just convert half of them.
The fact that Babcock says that's the way they play all game, to me, that's actually wrong. You should understand that once the third period starts, you should understand the mentality of another team stepping out on the ice.
Would you like to join me? You know what we'll do, Andy? We're going to get Tom Rennie and Ralph Kruger and Dallas Eakins and all the guys who coached Edmonton through that decade, and we'll sit down and talk to them about trying to convince players to stop playing the way they were playing. They beat that message into the Oilers night after night
I'm not saying it's easy.
And it went nowhere.
I'm not saying it's easy, but that's the whole point that I'm trying to stress here, is that it's more of a mental game than anything else, and it's trying to understand the desperation of the other side, right?
It has nothing to do with the other side.
But of course it does. That's the team you're playing.
It doesn't. It has to do with the way you play. It has to do with the decisions you make.
But you're going
to
also make those decisions and plays based on the intensity of the game.
No, but Van Riemsdyk didn't make that decision last night in overtime because they were playing the Islanders. He made that decision because that's the way he thinks sometimes.
It's 3-on-3. You're trying to score.
Ignore the fact they're playing
the Islanders. It's hard for me to also judge somebody in 3-on-3, too.
Just make the right decision.
But to me, in a lot of ways, this is a good news story for the Leafs, right? Because the problem last year was they couldn't get leads.
Right.
The hard part is getting the lead. You can't coach a team to get leads like this team's gotten leads. It's about talent. Their talent has gotten these leads. I think, you look at it, there's 10 teams converting second intermission leads into 2 points at 90% rates, right? Yeah. Almost all. So all the good teams are doing that. The Leafs are doing it at 70%. So, you know, there's room for improvement there. And you've got to believe that if Mike Babcock and his staff are doing their job, then that will improve.
It will get better
over time.
That was Chicago for a while.
Yeah.
That was Chicago the first few years under Taves and Kane. It was a lot. I mean, the LA Kings tried it. You know, Doughty was trying to, you know, put on a Harlem Globetrotter show every night before he stabilized. They're a really good young team. Mm-hmm. All I say is, they have a long way to go. That's
well, you can't rush experience. And
Wait till Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner have been in the league 3 years. Think how good they're going to be when they've been in the league 3 years.
Yeah, but they're really good now. And the point is, like, this is teachable, coachable stuff in a lot of ways, right? So it shouldn't take that long to this eye. I mean, like,
they got to get better on defense.
They got to get better, but...
Or you can ruin morale. Like, that's another thing, too. That goes back to the previous comment I made, that even your fan base, your own players... will always buy in, provided they see that you're making moves to improve the team.
Right, and they've done that without having the benefit of guys they've drafted. You know, they find a Zaitsev out of the KHL who can play big minutes. That's a big pickup. Mm-hmm. They get Carrick in a throw in on a deal that no one even talked about the kid, and he's a serviceable guy that can play top six defense minutes.
And think about where they were this time last year. And just how bleak it looked.
So now they got a goaltender they think they can count on, although he's obviously taken a step back this month. Now they've got, you know, players.
You've got a superstar center. You have a bona fide. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy is going to be one of the top five players in the league. In a matter of 2 to 3 years, Austin Matthews is going to be one of the best players in the NHL. And I don't think anyone doubts that. Can anyone really say that he won't be in that, you know, McDavid, Crosby, you know, strata of players?
Why would you?
He looks like it. I mean, everything said, he's on pace to score 40 goals as a rookie.
Mm-hmm. That's awfully impressive.
That's like 80 20 years ago.
And you know what? He's got 20 even strength goals. He's not chipping in cheapies on the power
beast.
Play.
He's big. He can skate. So you have all these pieces. It's just going to take some time. And it underlines how hard it is to get good in the NHL. And the problem is going to be, as soon as you get good, the salary cap kills you. that's the second part.
Yeah, but I think, Gordon, it's tough to get good. But to me, the gap between the really good teams and the not-so-good teams isn't that big, because it comes down to goaltending. And if you got one of those, that takes you a long way.
For me, it comes down – the management people I talk to say it comes down to defense more than goaltending. You can find goaltending. You can't find defense.
Why do so many teams struggle to find it? Dallas can't find it.
Antti Niemi won the Stanley – I mean, look, at the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup last year with three different goaltenders. Three different goaltenders started.
They were playing well.
Right, but the three different starting goalies in the playoffs for them. What the one constant was? Chris Letang, 28 minutes a night. That's a constant for them.
Well, there are a lot, yeah. I mean, you even look at certain goalies when they go to another team, and it's like, well, what happened? Well, he doesn't have the same defense in front of him, right? Like, we've heard that argument before.
Marty Brodeur had the worst save percentage. The last 3 years of his career, he had the worst save percentage over that time in the NHL. That mean he was a bad goaltender? No, it means he no longer had Niedermeyer, Rafalski, Stevens, and Danico in front of him.
Yeah, and he was at the end of his career too.
Right, but I mean that was a horrible defense, and the next guy that came in wasn't much better. Right, I mean their defense just isn't. I mean Detroit's goaltending hasn't fallen apart, and by the way, Detroit won four cups with three different starting goaltenders.
Right, mm-hmm. And Hall of Famers throughout.
But Nick Lidstrom playing in front of them makes every goaltender 10 mm-hmm. points better.
Oh, without a doubt.
So I think that the good and the bad is, you're right. The good is, look at where this team is this year. You look at Nazem Kadri, leading the team last year with like 45 points, and where they are now as far as the scoring. We just talked about five rookies scoring last night. Hyman with his three shorthanded goals. The amount of points they're putting up, they're beating what they were able to do last year. So there's your improvement. And they're close. They're right there. Well, they're actually, you know, sitting in the playoff position right now. They're close to making the playoffs. That's all good. And then, though, because of that, you have the fan base that wants more, too, right? You see it. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel. You taste it. Just do this. And it can get a little out of hand. But why not? I mean, to me, that's also a good problem to have.
This step was hard. Getting to this step is hard. The next step's harder. Mm-hmm. The next step is even harder.
Yeah, because you're not winning a lottery. And it doesn't just get hand. You don't just pick it up because you won a ping pong ball contest.
Right.
Yeah. That's it, guys. Have fun tonight.
I'll do what I can. He shoots, he scores. Four words, two are the same.
Don't mess up because I'll be listening. Festchuk, thanks for coming on in.
Good seeing you
last
guys.
Last minute substitution. We do hope Pooley made it out to Ottawa. We hope.
Can I cough now?
No, stop spreading the plague.
Thanks, sorry.
Jeez. All right, that's it for us. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. The Scott MacArthur Show is coming up next.